that Mary would pose a threat to Herod. After all, Herod was one of the great men of the world. His father was Antipater, a man who had enormous wealth and influence. His mother was a Nabatean princess. He was born in 73 BCE and died in March or April of 4 BCE. Mary, by contrast, was one of the lesser women of the world. Like millions of other people who have trod the face of this earth, the historical record does not know when she was born or when she died. The Gospel of James says that her parents were named Anne and Jehoiakim, but that book was written in the second century, long after Mary died, and no one is really certain what the names of her parents were. Who would have thought that Mary would be a threat to Herod? Herod was well connected to some of the most famous people then living in the world. For example, Herod had visited Rome and personally knew Julius Caesar and Mark Antony. On the day that the Roman Senate declared him to be the king of the Jews, Herod walked out of the Senate building with his friends Julius Caesar and Mark Antony standing on either side of him. That night, Mark Antony gave a banquet in honor of Herod, the new king of the Jews. Mary had no connections to anyone in the Roman Empire. She never met Julius Caesar or Mark Antony. The Roman Senate never declared her to be queen of anything. And nobody in Rome gave a banquet in her honor. So who would have thought that Mary would threaten Herod, friend to famous Romans? Herod was rich. Or maybe a better way to put it is that he extracted wealth from his long-suffering subjects. The economic burden that Herod placed on his subjects was heavy. There were basically three economic impositions that the average peasant bore in Herod's kingdom, and to be fair, only one of them was Herod's fault. The other two were not his. The first economic imposition was the tithe paid to the temple, and this was, of course, imposed by the priests who worked in the temple in Jerusalem. The second was the tribute imposed by the Roman emperor for his own purposes. And then third was this tax imposed by Herod. But this tax, the one by Herod, all by itself, was heavy. We infer this from all of Herod's building projects. Herod built Greco-Roman theaters and amphitheaters, fortresses, palaces, colonnades, and temples. He constructed a new city on the coast in honor of Caesar, which he named Caesarea. That was the name of the city. The city took 12 years to build, and it was an architectural wonder. Other construction projects in his realm included the fortress at Masada, three palaces and a hippodrome in Jericho, and various construction projects in Samaria. And then there was the new temple in Jerusalem, begun around 20 BCE. To erect this new and more magnificent temple, Herod had to tear down the old temple that was already there and build this new one from the ground up. Now, this temple building itself was not all that large, and it only took a year and a half to build. But The surrounding courts and outbuildings took another 80 years to build, long after Herod had died. And though that work employed 1,000 masons and carpenters. Think what it took to pay all those guys. As if these expensive building projects within his own kingdom were not enough, Herod also funded construction projects in other parts of the empire. He provided gymnasia for Tripolis, Damascus, and Ptolemais, a wall for Byblus, halls, porticos, temples, and marketplaces for Berytus and Tyre, theaters for Sidon and Damascus, and an aqueduct for the city of Laodicea. On and on this stuff went. There were gifts to the cities of Chios, Kos, Phasaelis, Balania, Athens, Rhodes, and Syrian Antioch. And besides all of that, he presented large gifts, call them bribes if you want to important people like Mark Antony and Caesar Augustus. Where did all this money come from? Well, it came from the peasants who unfortunately lived inside Herod's kingdom. The tax burden was heavy. In fact, one historian puts it this way: Herod was bleeding his country and his people to death. By contrast, Mary. She bled no one to death. She did not extract wealth from other people in order to advance her own name or her own prestige or her own luxurious comfort. Who would have thought that Mary, of all people, poor Mary, would become such a threat to rich Herod? Herod's religious loyalties were mixed. On the surface of things, he was supposedly a Jew. At least that's what he told his Jewish subjects, for whom he built this nice Jewish temple in Jerusalem. But in reality, Herod's religious fidelity was not nearly as pure as he pretended. The truth is that in several places outside of Jerusalem, Herod built temples to the worship of the Roman emperor. Now get that. You walk in those temples, you don't worship God. You worship the reigning Roman emperor. This was anathema to Jews. Herod invested heavily in what today we call civil religion, a civil religion that freely mixed religion and politics together for the purpose of glorifying the Roman Empire. Mary never worshipped the emperor, as far as we know. She was not a civil religionist. All the stories about her that we have say she was as devoted to God as anyone possibly could be. So who would have thought that Mary, devoted to God, would be such a threat to Herod's easy come, easy go religion? And then there was the matter of violence. Herod was a violent man. When the Roman Senate made him king of the Jews, Herod still had to earn his kingdom. He couldn't just walk into Jerusalem, sit down in the palace on the throne, and immediately start issuing, ruling the kingdom and issuing orders. Instead, he had to fight for his kingdom when he returned from Rome by defeating enemies in the area who were opposed to his rule. This took 3 years for Herod and his army to fight and finally defeat these opposing forces. The last stage of the military campaign was the siege of Jerusalem. By this point, Herod had pacified the surrounding countryside, and the only thing left was the city of Jerusalem. So he had besieged Jerusalem with 11 battalions and 6,000 cavalry. When Jerusalem finally fell, it didn't take long. When it finally fell, Herod's troops poured into the city and massacred the inhabitants. People were butchered in the alleys, in their houses, and while fleeing for safety into the sanctuary of the temple. At this point, Herod finally became king in fact, as well as in name, but at terrible cost to the people who lived in his kingdom. Herod's violence even extended to members of his own family. Due to intrigue, paranoia, and deception, Herod eventually murdered his second wife, a woman whom he had initially loved very much. He also murdered their two sons, his wife's brother, his wife's mother, and his wife's grandmother. Think about Mary. She was a peaceable woman. She started no wars, led no armies, wielded no swords, killed no family members. Who would have thought that peaceful Mary would so threaten a violent Herod? And yet, for all that you might think, Mary was in fact a threat to Herod. At least that's what he thought. What makes her so threatening to Herod is that Mary represents a frightening energy in the world that Herod does not understand and cannot control. That energy is the energy of God. Herod still regards himself as the rightful king of the Jews. Had not the Roman Senate given him that title? Was he not now sitting on the throne in Jerusalem? Then what new king were these strange magi from the east talking about? Herod's first impulse when he hears this news is to strike back with subterfuge, with trickery and cunning. That doesn't work, so he resorts to what Herod usually resorts to, which is the sword. This infant king must be killed. The infant's father must be killed. And this infant's mother must be killed because the mother might yet bear more sons who would grow up to be princes, and we can't have that in our kingdom. Mary threatens Herod because she represents God's missional energy in the world. Mary has chosen to cooperate with God, to collaborate with the things that God wants to accomplish, and it threatens Herod's world. Here is a paradox. Even though Herod's persecution of Mary, and of course Jesus and Joseph, even though Herod's persecution makes Mary anxious, it probably scares her, frightens her, she's not sure that she's going to be able to live through this because Herod has killed lots of people before and he can do it again. But even though she is anxious for her safety, this same persecution by Herod also tells her just how important she and her son are. A consistent theme running through the stories of Mary that we've been talking about these 6 weeks is how this insignificant person becomes highly significant when she says yes to God's missional invitation. What makes Mary important is collaborating with God's work in the world. She's a nobody up to this point in time. Suddenly, her life takes on huge importance because of her cooperation with God. She began discovering some of her own importance when Gabriel comes and pays her this visit. And now Herod, in a sort of backhanded way, verifies her importance by perceiving her as a threat that he has to neutralize. If Mary weren't so important to Herod, Herod would never have paid any attention to her. In these stories, Mary's self-identity is sometimes slowly and sometimes rapidly changing. She is beginning to understand herself as a valued partner with God. In one way or another, many of you in this room have become part of God's mission. In your vocation, or in your volunteering, or in your family life, you have linked with God in the work that God wants to do in this community, or in the communities that you came from, if you're visiting today. I suggest that what was happening to Mary could very well be happening to you too. When we join in God's mission, our self-identity as individuals begins to shift. We perceive our worth in a new way. Our spirits rise and rejoice. Our hearts beat more quickly. Our joy blossoms, even if we are a threat. Even if we are a threat.